And welcome again to the Ask Beattie Show. And isn't it the truth, my friends? Whether or not we're rich or poor, or black or white, or straight or gay, or trans, or religious, or not religious, we certainly all go through so many ups and downs in our lives. And what I can tell you is that nobody is immune from the challenges of life. And what I've been trying to convince you and motivate you to do in the last number of years, in fact, today is the 274th Ask Beattie Show here on the Progressive Radio Network. So what I've been actually hoping that I have been successful in doing is convincing you is that when you start to feel that you're on a never-ending roller coaster ride or merry-go-round ride and not a fun ride, that you're going to stop and you're going to give yourself permission to reach out and actually ask for help. And sometimes that may mean some short-term therapy. I think a lot of people, when they think of therapy, they think, oh my goodness, I'm going to be in therapy for years and years, and it's going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, although sometimes we're going to talk about the cost of therapy in this country. It can be expensive, but the fact is that it is so important for all of us, and I think a lot of people are reluctant to do this, is that when we have our issues, whether or not we're talking about depression. I mean, if we're looking at depression in this country, there are approximately 16 million adults in the United States, and that translates into 1 in 5 Americans who are suffering from true clinical depression. And what about anxiety disorders? Well, we're told that there are about 40 million adults that are suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders. And substance abuse, and we have issues with domestic violence in relationships and divorce. You know, the divorce rate, and I think a lot of people are surprised to hear this in the country, has actually gone down a few points. It's about 45% right now, down from 50. But what about second marriage as well? People are very surprised to hear that the divorce rate for second marriages happens to be 63%. And what about for third marriages? Do we actually learn anything from our first to second to third marriage? Well, what do you think that number is? Well, the answer is that for third marriages, we have a divorce rate in this country of 72%. And you kind of wonder, what is that all about? And if you're looking at domestic violence statistics, in the United States, there are 3 women who are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partner. And of course, for those of you who've been listening to the Ask Beattie Show for all these years, you've hopefully been able to really take in the 3 things that we actually need to learn, the 3 things that we actually need to do so that we are going to be able to find and maintain a healthy relationship and so that we will never make a mistake in love again. And what is the first thing? Well, we need to be in a really good place ourselves emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. And even though it sometimes is not fun, we have to go back to our family of origin issues and work through as best as we can, emotionally work through the abuse that may have happened, the sexual assault, the verbal abuse, the neglect, things that we would like so much to be able to just put in a closet and pretend that they do not impact our life today. And I've been practicing now for over 35 years, and for people who know me, they know that in my personal life, I'm probably one of the most impatient people that you will ever want to meet. Now, professionally, of course, I would say that I'm probably one of the most patient people that you would ever want to work with. And if I had found a way, my friends, to be able to fast forward the process of not having to deal with what I call our skeletons in the closet and our unfinished business, I would have been the person to figure this out. But unfortunately, the reality is that we do need to work through our own issues so that, you know, as I was teaching my daughter Jordana when she started to date, I said, honey, listen, the relationship needs to be the icing on the cake. We need to be the cake. We need to be the foundation. We need to be solid so that we are not entering into relationships where we're feeling lonely and needy and we're hoping that there's going to be a prince or a princess who's going to come down from the skies and rescue us, because the reality, of course, is that that really doesn't happen. And then number two, we have to be students of healthy relationships. And I think that most people, if they were not really lucky enough to grow up in families where they learned about healthy relationships, the ingredients that actually go into healthy relationships, where are you going to get that information? Certainly not watching soap operas, certainly not watching television shows. So that, again, there's a learning curve here for all of us. And then number three, which is my research and my book, which culminated in my 10-step formula that actually teaches people how to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. And the thing that is so wonderful about the formula, and it's not because I did the research or it's not because I wrote the book, but because it actually works and thousands of people around the world have successfully used this formula, it empowers us, it educates us, and above all, it keeps us safe, so that there are things that we all need to learn in the area of relationships. You know, it was really interesting. I had a new patient yesterday, and she came in, a woman, 45 years of age. She had been in a relationship with a man for 9 years. They had been engaged for 4 years. And she told me that just a couple of months ago, he came home and announced that he was leaving. And she was completely blindsided and shocked, never dreaming that there were, in quotes, problems in the relationship. In fact, he moved in with a new woman within a couple of weeks after leaving. So we started at the beginning, and by the end of our two-hour session, she was able to be honest, not just with me, but with herself, that she knew almost from day one that there were significant problems. He used drugs. He used all kinds of prescription and over-the-counter medications, and he drank so much. And I said to her, I said, how did you rationalize all of this? She said, look, I loved him, and I wish I could say that love was enough, but love is not enough. And I think unless people have the confidence and the skill to be willing to acknowledge and address and resolve issues early on, the problems are not going to disappear on their own. And as we continued the discussion, there were so many other clues. There were so many, and she was laughing. She says, well, they were pink flags. I said, no, they were red flags. After the first year, they stopped having sex. Well, what was that all about? Here was a really young guy and a really attractive young woman, and why did they stop having sex? Why did they stop communicating? Why did they really stop spending time together? And she said, look, I was afraid. I was really afraid to approach him and let him know how I was really feeling. And obviously, he was afraid and certainly reluctant to approach here. So here we have a nine-year relationship that has come to an end. And the thing that was really impressive about this woman yesterday is that she said, look, I've decided I want to become honest with myself. I don't want to continue to make the same mistakes over and over again. And just before the end of the session, it was really interesting. She said, by the way, I didn't want to tell you because I was embarrassed, but I was married before. And guess what happened? I was married for 5 years, and my husband, my ex-husband, came home and said, I'm leaving, and I'm leaving for another woman. I said, well, this really must feel like deja vu. And she said, yes, it did. And she said, look, I need to finally take responsibility for not having had the confidence, for not having had the skill to be able to sit down and say, look, we have some issues, we have some problems, and we don't need to wait until the drawer is completely filled with all the issues and all the unfinished business that we haven't talked about. And I suggest to people all the time to find the place, to find the way, to find the words, to say it well. And if you need to, just make an agenda of items, not when you're going to bed and not when you're running out of the house in the morning, and deal. And if you don't know how to problem solve, and I think that many people, if not most people in their personal lives, do really not know the art, and it is an art, of emotional communication and problem solvings, give yourself permission. It is not a weakness. It is a strength. And get some help, so that unlike the woman that I saw yesterday, that you're not going to find yourself in a very similar kind of a situation. And denial and avoidance, it may work for a very short period of time, but sooner or later, the pot is going to boil over. So if you're in a situation right now where you're reluctant and you don't know what to do and you don't know how to say it, but you know that there are issues in your relationship, whether they're abusive issues, whether they're sexual issues, whether or not there's a problem with substance abuse, give yourself permission to reach out. Of course, you can always reach out to me, and the number here on the Ask Beattie Show is 888-874-4888. Now, before I introduce, I have a terrific, terrific guest today. I want to just review something with you that I read in the New York Times this morning. And there was a big piece in the Smarter Living section. And the headline was, Giving Advice That People Want to Take. And this was a piece by a woman by the name of Anna Goldfarb. And she says, be cautious when offering guidance to friends and family. So this is what she says. She says, a friend recently approached me in distress, saying that she wasn't sure if she should dump her boyfriend or not. With wide, wet eyes, she asked me what I think she should do. It gave me pause. Of course, I thought she should get rid of her abusive boyfriend, but I didn't want to put our relationship at risk in case she stayed with him after I shared my opinion. So as anyone who has offered guidance knows, giving spectacular advice, I mean, we may think it's spectacular advice, the person may not, doesn't necessarily mean people will take it. Advice is a gift, albeit one bundled with inherent power dynamics. And sometimes when people don't take their advice, they're rejecting the idea of being controlled by it. You know, sometimes, you know, somebody will say, well, what do you think? But they really don't want to hear what you think. They really want to continue to do exactly what they have always done. But what have researchers found? Researchers identified three factors that determine whether input will be taken to heart. And I found this to be so interesting. People will go along with advice if it was costly to attain the task. And you know what's so funny is that last week I actually made a decision to reduce my fees. I decided, especially, I mean, there's so much poverty and racism and income inequality and unemployment. I want everybody to have access to the best mental health possible. So I actually posted on Facebook, and I rarely do much on Facebook, that I was going to reduce my fees by 50%. And it was not going to be just a 1 week deal. I really and truly felt that, look, I started this whole psychotherapy, sex therapy journey a long, long time ago, and I have to tell you, it was never about the money. It never was. It never really dawned on me. I mean, here I was, an Orthodox Jewish Canadian girl. I finished my graduate and postgraduate work at McGill. I loved helping people. That was the work I wanted to do. So that money, it never quite became a factor. And of course, we want to have a good standard of living, and you want to have, a good salary for yourself. So in this column, I thought it was so interesting that, well, people will go along with advice if it was costly to attain. But in my practice, when people call me, the first thing I ask is whether or not they're serious. Because if they are not serious, I have no interest whatsoever in wasting my time and energy and expertise with people who are not really willing to do the work. So what else did the research find? Well, advice is also more likely to be taken if the person offering counsel is more experienced and expresses extreme confidence in the quality of the advice. Well, you certainly, if you're asking, somebody for advice, you really do want to be sure that, especially if it's, dicey situations, important advice that you're seeking, that you're going to an expert. And in my world and in the medical world, believe me, all therapists are not the same. All doctors are not the same. All dentists are not the same. So we really have to do our research. And third, decision makers are more likely to disregard advice if they feel certain about what they're going to do. For example, staying with a dud boyfriend no matter what, or they're angry, sending an ill-advised text while fuming. So some people, they want to do what they want to do. And, my feeling is that, okay, you're going to do what you're going to do, and then you're going to have to deal with the consequences of your decisions. So I thought this was a really interesting piece. So my guest today is not only my friend, but she is an absolute expert in the area of motivational exercise. Sonia is a mind-body expert. Sonia Sartre is a mind-body expert and founder and CEO of the movement-based wellness program Motisize, which is motivational exercise. Formerly the star of Guiding Light and One Life to Live. And Sonia, I remember watching the shows, and here we are all these years later, and here you are, the former star of the Guiding Light and One Life to Live. She now travels the world bringing her message of empowerment and body intelligence to businesses, conferences, and individuals around the globe. So in 2014, Motisize launched its debut DVD with companion workshop, Mindset Reset. Sonia's been featured on CBS, ABC, Fox, and the Huffington Post, Celebrity Parenting, Women, Fitness, and other radio, TV, and magazine outlets. And in 2016, she was a featured speaker at the EO, which is the Entrepreneurs Organization Global Conference in Banff, Alberta. I used to live in Calgary. I love Banff. And she has presented her award-winning programs to Goldman Sachs, Cisco, Seamless, Grubhub, Verizon, the Army Corps of Engineers, and at Athleta and Talbot. She lives with her husband and two beautiful children in New York City, one block away from Jim and me, and we really do need to spend more time walking our dogs and talking together. So welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm so glad you're here. I really am.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I love this, and I love so much of what you said today because it's so applicable to
all of us.
Topic and our, yes, and all of us. Absolutely.
Exactly. So let me ask you something. And I don't think that even when we've been together socially, I've ever asked you the question, why did you decide to leave the stardom of soap operas and television?
Gosh, you know, I think it was a progression. I think there was a part of me that always wanted to do something that would really make a difference, that would really help people. And I remember working with somebody and I said, well, when I become really huge and famous, then I'm going to do something important. And she was like, well, why don't you just do something important now?
So you didn't feel when you were starring in these, I mean, these were very big soap operas, Sonia. You didn't feel that it was really important.
I did. Actually, I did. And you know, it's so funny because when you said you don't learn about relationships through watching soap operas, I was like, well, that's probably true.
That is true. You learn a lot about dysfunctional relationships.
What not to do.
Exactly.
However, one of my most sort of treasured moments, I was in a rape storyline. I was on a first date, and my first date raped my character. And
wow.
Yeah. And so we did a full-fledged rape storyline, and I was very into it and handing out Dateline numbers and doing a lot of interviews on helping people to get help, because I think so many women don't want to speak up. I think now with the hashtag Me Too movement, thank goodness, we're making some progress. But back then, it certainly was not something you talked about. And probably one of my most treasured moments was I got a letter from a fan who said, when your character got help, I got help.
Wow.
Yeah. That was when I thought, wow, this does have an impact. It can make a difference. And so while you might not learn much about relationships, there were storylines that, you know, that did approach very serious topics. And they, in those storylines, I think they did do some responsible things, and certainly many of the actors who were involved in them also tried to do some responsible things on the outside to help others that had gone through things like that.
So it touched you?
It did. It definitely, definitely moved me a lot.
Do you think that that may have been maybe not the turning point, but a turning point where you started to think about, you know, what else you could do to help people?
You know, I never actually thought of it that way, but probably, because when I realized how much of an impact that had on me and how good that made me feel, because, yeah, there were days you'd go into the soap opera and you'd read your lines and you're like, oh, my gosh, how on earth do I say these things?
Right.
This is ridiculous. And yet you had to be convicted to it. And yet when there was something of that much value, to think that I could have helped one person, and if I helped one, maybe there were another five that just didn't write a letter, you know, that were following and did get help. That really shook me to my core in both a good and perhaps a motivating way that showed me that is a value of mine, that was something that was so important and that I really wanted to do. And I think often in many of us who go into entertainment think you're going to do the movie that's going to change the world, right? And you don't always get that chance. And so clearly that was a part of me that felt like it was missing in some of the work that I was doing. While I would have these little moments on a day-to-day regular basis, I didn't feel like I was doing enough of it.
Because you starred in these soap operas for many, many years. I mean, this just was not a short gig.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. But if I tell you all the things my character did, you'd be that was really a golden moment of being able to help people. But, you know, I was kidnapped, and then I was, you know, got married and shipwrecked, and then the angel that came to help me fell in love with me, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And right. So it was, while it was fun and it was entertaining, and I think that there's huge value in that too, it wasn't making the impact like that one storyline did.
So you started to feel it more and more as the years went by that something was missing.
Yes.
How interesting. So
yeah, and it was hard. It was a hard decision, and it took a lot of years for me to really step out. And it, in fact, it was interesting. I was offered. It finally came down to the day that I decided I was offered. It was a request audition for a series regular on Law and Order.
Wow.
Or a speaking gig. I had those two choices to make. Nobody could bend. And that was the day that I decided I wanted to move into the speaking.
So what were they asking you to speak about at that point?
I was talking a lot about how to shift your perspectives, because when you shift your perspective and you start to tap into a more empowered part of you, you become more resourceful. You can tap that body intelligence. You can come up with those ideas that you don't necessarily think of when you're coming from a less empowered place.
But what a choice.
It was an audition. Uh-huh. It wasn't the part.
Right.
It was just the audition, but I was requested for it, which... You know, you're not requested for starring, you know, the lead roles and things very often. So right. I was definitely a front runner in it.
But, and that was the beginning.
And that was completely the beginning.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So how and why did you decide to focus on empowerment and body intelligence? I mean, you could have gone off in a million different directions. You could have gone off into the political arena. I mean, it could have been anything. What was it,
you know, I think,
about body and exercise?
Well, I mean, I had a whole history with body, too, because in my very early days, I don't even know if I've shared this with you, but I had an eating disorder. When I was 12, I was anorexic, and I struggled with that for a lot of years. And being in the entertainment business, it certainly was of high consciousness.
That you can never be too rich or too thin.
Yes, and, exactly. So it was always in my face. So it, while I had kind of gotten it under control, it was always front and center. But I think one of the things that fortunately I was able to learn from that was how powerful the mind was. Absolutely. That you could convince yourself that you were fat when you were, you know, a skeleton.
Yes.
That clearly was when it flipped into a danger zone. But I think I was always fascinated by how that could do and how you could get yourself to do the things you would do to burn calories just so that you could be thin. And so when I finally came out of it and was able to see it from a slightly different perspective, I was really interested in that. And then from the acting, from mindset, I was always interested in mindset because of acting. You know, I was rejected all the freaking time.
Of course.
There was constant trying to find ways to remotivate yourself, to keep going, to keep believing in yourself when everybody else told you you were, you know, not enough. And so I was fascinated with that. And then acting is a lot about tapping into your body, you know,
absolutely,
to become a different character. And so I think all of my years of training didn't go to waste. It all was there to build up to this moment.
Hardly, because, you know what, I'm constantly pulling articles about exercise. And of course, you know, here's a Harvard Health publishing study. Exercise, we know, is an all-natural treatment to fight depression. So we have 1 in 10 adults in the United States struggling with depression, and antidepressant medications are a common way to treat the condition. And, of course, in this country, the overprescription of the pills and the antidepressants. And, you know, this woman that I saw yesterday, I mean, yes, she was understandably depressed and understandably anxious. And she told me that she'd actually seen in the last month 3 different therapist who immediately prescribed Zoloft, and she should be doing this and get on more, you know, chemical things. And I asked her, I said, listen, do you exercise? I haven't exercised in 3 months. I said, well, your homework for tomorrow is get yourself to the gym or at least take a walk, because we know so much about exercise. And research shows that exercise is also, I mean, it's a really effective treatment. I mean, not for people who have major, major, major depression.
Sure.
They may need something else and do need something else. But, you know, the studies keep coming out. And I find, Sonia, I don't know what you find, is that people tend to make all kinds of excuses about why they can't exercise. And you don't need to go to a gym. You can walk around the block. You can take a run someplace. You can, you know, buy a few weights and do a few weight-bearing exercises.
And then they don't want to do it. It goes back to your advice thing. I thought that you read. I thought that was so applicable, because how many times are people told they should work out? You should go to the gym. You know you should.
Right.
You've heard that advice from 10,000 people, and you read it in every magazine, and yet, and you don't. And so, one of the things that I've found to sometimes be a helpful little exercise around that, too, is to get to the deeper thing, because we all know that we should.
Right.
We all know that it's going to make us feel better. We all know it'll make us healthier. Maybe it'll make us less depressed.
Right.
But what's important about that? And then you come up with an answer. And then, well, what's important about that? And I'll ask people that question like 7 to 8 times. And when you start getting to that fifth or sixth time, when you ask about what's important about it, that's when you really start tapping the juice. That's when you start getting to what's really important about it. And so you get beyond just the, okay, I know I should because it's healthy. I'm going to feel better. I'm going to have better, more energy. Well, what's important about energy? You know, this.
Yes.
And what's important about that? And so you really start to dig deeper into the core of a person's what drives them. And sometimes when you hit upon that nerve of, well, what's really important is that I want to be alive for my kid, you know, or something like that, it helps move the needle a little bit.
Exactly, because there was another study that was written about in the New York Times. The new study offers both hope and a subtle nudge to anyone who is slacked off on exercise. This is actually some really good news. It finds that if people start to exercise in midlife, even if they have not worked out for years, they can rapidly gain most of the longevity benefits of working out. And there was this really interesting study. The researchers, they drew on the replies of over 315,000 of men and women. And what they found is that some of the men and women said that they had been unwavering in their workout routine, spending about as many or few hours exercising in midlife as when they had been teenagers. Others had been active when young, but kind of trailed off as adults. But not surprisingly, those men and women who'd been sedentary throughout their lives were the most likely now to have died, particularly from heart disease. And, you know, I think the good news about this piece is that it's never too late
to start. It's never too late, and you don't have to go run a marathon tomorrow. Like you said, you can take a walk around the block, and that's one of the things that I sort of, it was a byproduct of what I created, not because that was my intention, but a lucky byproduct was that many people like what I do because they're not thinking about exercise, because I'll guide them through a process around a goal that they might want, something that they're excited about, and I'll ask a lot of questions around the goal while they're exercising. So they're focused on something else that they actually want, and then it's paired, and I'll get it into your body, into your mind, into your neurology at the same time, plus the additional creativity that stems from exercise, because you become way more creative when you exercise. Your brain is primed for that, for learning, for creative, for creativity, for focusing, for memorizing. Mm-hmm. Good steady tool, study tool. And then they focus on this, and then they're not thinking about, well, I've got 30 reps to do, or I have 30 more minutes to do, or I hate how I feel when I'm doing this. They're thinking about something else, and that helps how they feel about it. And by the time they're done, they're like, oh, we're done. I didn't even realize I was really exercising.
But I think that people, whether or not they're talking about exercising, or whether or not people are thinking maybe only thinking about, you know, how to improve my relationship, people tend to, at least in my experience, and I'm really curious about what you have found, to bottom out. Things aren't going well. And then they begin to realize that maybe there's some things, exercise, therapy, something that they need to do because they are just going around in circles and are not feeling well physically, mentally, emotionally, psychologically, psychiatrically. Do you find that that's the case typically with people that you work with?
I definitely think people will take action if they're either their why is compelling enough or the pain gets too great.
Yes.
So, yes, I think the pain is that bottom. I have bottomed out. There is no further I can go. I must do something. And I'm so low, I'm even willing to exercise.
And then, surprise, I start to feel better.
And I've never had a single solitary person exercise and feel worse. Never once. Not even once.
I don't think it can happen. They may feel tired or stiff. But definitely better.
Absolutely, positively, 100% of the time. That's like a pretty hard guarantee to give. Does somebody feel mentally better and emotionally better?
And yet Americans have the highest obesity rate in the world.
I know.
So it's about trying to somehow continue to get these really important messages out.
It is. And unfortunately, I think a lot of the things in the food that people are overeating is messing with the brain and definitely increasing depression and killing motivational factors. And they're having those sugar highs and the crashes. And when you're crashing, it's really hard to get yourself up around the block, you know. And so they're definitely making it harder for you rather than easier.
And when you're sitting at the computer, day in and day out for hours and hours and hours and hours. I mean, again, all the studies, you know, talk about the importance of, you know, turning off the phones, turning off the computers, moving around, getting some exercise, feel, you know, taking care, you know, of your mind-body relationship. And yet somehow, I mean, we're not doing, despite all the research, despite all the wonderful work that you and so many people are doing, we're not getting it through, the message through to the majority of Americans.
Right. I think it's still at this it's at this intellectual level. Like, we all know it, but it's when it starts to hit the emotional core, when it starts to get and become a real emotional issue, that's when maybe the change can start to happen.
Do you find in the schools, you have school-age children, is gym and exercise, are these still important programs? Because I know that some of the schools have actually eliminated.
Can you imagine? Like, are you kidding me?
Exactly. Exactly.
It's insane. In fact, it's part of what was at the beginnings of my research was a book called Spark. It is brilliant. John Rady, he's a Harvard professor, and they actually studied a physical ed program in Chicago, in a school system outside of Chicago, and the gym teacher thought the gym program was stupid because, like most gym programs, the good kids are like doing things and the other kids are coming up with the excuses not to do it and not. So he changed the entire physical ed program and actually had students wear heart rate monitors and had them run to their heart rate, like what their ideal heart rate was, every single morning, and then integrated some physical activity throughout the day. And at the end of the year, that school district had a 3% obesity rate, which is almost unheard of in this country.
Yes.
And they scored first and sixth in the math and science tests in the world. That was also unheard of. We don't score typically that well. We're usually, many of the Asian countries top us by a significant amount. So they really started to study what is going on. And that's when they noticed that this exercise was actually making these kids smarter. They were starting to learn. They were starting to focus better. They started to do some studies in schools with ADD. Or kids with attention deficit or other learning disorders. And they put them on treadmills. They brought treadmills in. They'd have them work out in the morning and then again at different times during the day. Those kids, their test scores went up as much as 400%. They skipped entire grade levels. That's the impact it can have. So to pull physical education out of schools is insane. thankfully, my kids go to a more progressive place, school, so they tend to exercise there. But it is just absolutely insane to pull phys ed out of schools.
And it's happening, unfortunately, more and more.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Now, you work in corporations, so I'm really, really curious. You know, how did you approach and how did you actually get into a Verizon? I mean, these are pretty conservative corporate climates. I mean, what did you do?
Well, I think there was the dual function. They could get two in one. They could help their teams be more creative and have a little bit of some team building bonding. At the same time, they could reduce stress, anxiety, and have a bit of fun and fitness. And so they were game for giving it a try. And it was really, really successful. They all were like, this was the best thing we've ever done. And they came up with some creative ideas, which is one of the things that I think is what I love the most from what I do, is that when you really focus your mind on something particular when you're working out, bam, that's when ideas come to you. And you, because you're tapping those channels, you're not blocked with stress, and you're also not thinking through a problem. You're actually, it's coming from within, and those are some of the best ideas.
I think it's really, you know, much to say about you and your expertise and your beauty and your personality that you were able to actually convince these corporations that this was something that they should seriously consider. I mean, initially, were they open to this?
Initially, I think they didn't understand what it was.
Right.
So I have gone in and done some trial. I did that with Goldman Sachs. I went in and did a trial for the deciders, decision makers, and I showed them what we were going to do.
Uh-huh. Men and women, mostly men. What was the composition?
It's been in that situation, it happened to be women. In other ones, it was men.
Uh-huh.
But you know, it's interesting because I always think of exercise as women oriented, but the men, I've had a lot of men really love this because it's so mindset related and it's so goal oriented. And so for them, it's another tool to achieve a goal
right.
in a faster, quicker, more focused, more creative way. And they really have latched onto it. So I have actually had men be almost more open to it in the corporate world than the women, who I think are still trying to figure out how they should be in the corporate world.
Right. You know, I'm noticing here the Army Corps of Engineers. Now, I would think that that would be primarily men.
Yeah, that was primarily
men. A conservative group,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So how did you get in there?
That one was for a special event that they were trying to do, so that probably helped make it a little easier. So I talked about the impact of exercise on problem solving and decision making.
Yes.
Because it's huge
of
in
course.
That, and that's something that's very important to them.
Right.
And
it's true.
And it's true.
Right.
And there's
right.
tons of science and tons of factual information that back that up. And so they were curious about it from that point of view and how they might be able to utilize that. And so that was how I got in there. And then I got everybody up and moving and everybody had a good time and everybody felt energized
of
and
course.
Refreshed. And, you know, you're sitting in these long, day-long events and everybody's just talking at you. And all of a sudden you're getting up and having a physical experience. And they're like, and so it's energizing. It's fun. It's different.
I've done it with you many times.
Yeah.
I've been a part of an audience and all of a sudden Sonia gets up and it's really true. We sit, we listen, and then we need that energizing.
That energizing shift.
Yes, exactly.
And it's great for all the people who come after me because people are just that much more focused. Because they really
no,
are.
No, it's true. In fact, my panel.
It was right after.
Yes, it was
people were like on every. They'd be listening to you regardless, but.
Well, you know, thank you.
It adds an extra boost.
So with the work that you're doing with Modisize, I mean, is it ongoing? Like, would you be going back to a Verizon on a weekly basis, a monthly basis? I mean, how do you actually motivate these companies to continue with this really amazing program so that it's not just a one-shot deal?
Right. Well, Well, I have gone back to several of them to keep the process going and to get it more ingrained in their system and to apply it to different aspects or to different teams as well. And sometimes it's still just a one-shot deal, but we're talking about how we can make this a bigger part of the company. How can they actually utilize this? Because companies are also looking for new ways. They're looking for cutting-edge ways to offer something that's different for their employees, something that's got both a health aspect, and stress is so high amongst employees these days,
right.
And we know it's killing attendance and turnover and all of those things. So it helps.
And the bottom line.
And the bottom line. So it significantly reduces that innately just by the fact that people are moving. And then we're adding in this extra component to something that can be applied to the work and the bottom line as well.
Mm-hmm. And how long typically are each of your sessions with Motisize?
Typically, I do about an hour.
An hour.
45 minutes to an hour, unless I'm speaking at a conference or something, in which case sometimes it's 20 minutes, or sometimes it's even I'll come in at varying times in different breaks to sort of pick people up and refocus them. But a typical session's about an hour.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you know whether or not in the inner city schools in New York, do they typically have gym programs? Do they have PE programs, or have those programs also been cut?
I think, unfortunately, the inner city programs are some of the ones that have been cut, and it has been the nonprofits that have tried to bring it in to those schools. It's, again, insane.
Because you see what, you know, the kids eat, and when you're living in poverty, and, you know, I'll sometimes notice, you know, the carbs and the junk and the obesity, which then, you know, you're dealing with heart disease and diabetes and all of these kinds of problems. You know, it's so sad
because it puts you at a deficit. You're
absolutely
starting at a complete and utter deficit.
Mm-hmm. You know, have you been in touch with, I was going to say Tallahassee, not Tallahassee, but Albany, there would be, I'm not sure what department where you could have some real impact in the area of education,
mm-hmm.
you know, with a sports exercise focus, to see whether or not in the state of New York, you know, your program could be something that could be implemented in hundreds and thousands of schools.
It's a great idea. I have not, but I will now.
You know,
thanks. It's a great idea.
I mean, you know, you've gotten the research results. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know, as you said, that the study that was done in Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty crystal clear study that you would actually think that schools around the country, you know, would want to duplicate. It's not just, you know, Sonia's idea. I mean, here
no.
The program was such that the scores were up, the kids felt better, there was more focus, more motivation. And, you know, I think that we drop the ball in so many different ways, whether or not it's in your world or whether it's in the world of psychotherapy.
Yeah.
And we could be doing so much more early. On. So that, you know, people aren't living their lives and at 30 or 40 or 50, although, you know, it is never too late to mm-hmm. exercise or really get good help. But this should be something that would be part and parcel of schools' curriculums.
Yes. No, it would, both the mindset and the exercise piece, because they're both so critically important to a person's success. And we know it actually changes your brain.
Absolutely.
It really does rewire it. And so if you could start that and develop that habit at an early age, then it would, yeah, send you anything's possible from that point of view.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I was just thinking, you know, as we're talking, have you in New York City, since we live in New York City, you know, have you reached out to some of the private schools that hopefully, you know, would be willing to take some of their resources that,
right.
You know, the public schools don't have and that would be willing to do, you know, even an experiment to see, you know, how your program, you know, Motisize would impact the kids.
I haven't done it at that level. I have done a good bit of work at college levels.
You have?
I have. I have, including the University of Pennsylvania, the School uh-huh. for Positive Psychology, the program there.
Uh-huh.
I did it there as well as University of Pittsburgh and also St. Thomas Aquinas. In fact, I'm going back there next week. So I've definitely done it at a college level, and there they really do eat it up. And I've done it for a lot of nonprofits as well. I do a good amount of work with Grace. They retrain women in the workforce or give them a possibility of finding jobs, and they really eat that up as well, because they're always looking for ways to shift their mindset and move their bodies, and they can appreciate what it's like to not have it versus having it. So I have definitely done it in some of those arenas, but I haven't gone as young. The youngest I did, it was actually for Urban Arts, which is a nonprofit in New York. They do a lot of art programs, but uh-huh. they also brought me in to do the Motisize for one of their events. And so I did it. It was a wide range of kids. I think the youngest was fifth grade all the way on up through high school.
Uh-huh. And you're a one-person operation, are you not?
Mostly. I have assistants who can do it, but yeah.
You're doing it. So you're running around, you're juggling your marriage, your children. I mean, you're juggling a lot. And of course, you look great. You're exercising yourself on a regular basis with all of this, right?
I do. I do it for myself for work, and I also do it for my own sanity. I remember when I was in high school, I had really started to get into it at that point, exercising. And my mom, one day I was having a bad day, she's like, I'll drive you to the gym.
Right.
Will you go? I was like, yes.
Well, I mean, I was very, very fortunate as a young child, you know, growing up in Winnipeg, skating and competitive tennis and competitive badminton. And so that for my entire life, you know, I've been very, very active in the world of sports and in the competitive world of sports. And I know that probably the greatest benefit was to keep me sane.
Yes. Oh, without a doubt.
Definitely. And I found the last couple of days, I've had a cold. I haven't been to the gym. I haven't been on the tennis courts. And I really feel the difference.
Oh, my kids
mood,
will tell me
My
that.
Mood is starting to plummet. So hopefully tomorrow I'm going to be on a plane to Sarasota, where I'm going to be giving a couple of talks on relationships at New College in Sarasota, that I'm going to be able to, you know, with the warmth, start to move around and get to a tennis club and walk around. But I know that for me, I really feel the difference when I don't exercise on a regular basis.
Oh, huge.
It is huge.
And my family knows it. My kids will be like, oh, please, go work
out. Go. So listen, how do people reach Sonia Sutra? What's the best way of being able to contact you?
Well, you definitely can reach me at my site, Motisize, MOTICISE.com. Or I'm also on most of the social media channels.
That you are. The videos are great.
Yes, I have lots of Moti Minutes. If you just want to give it a try, just go check out YouTube, and I have Moti Minutes. So it's one mindset connected to one little exercise. It's something you could do anywhere. You could be on a train platform, in your kitchen. You don't have to go to a gym. You don't even have to wear exercise clothes. You could do it in most of the exercises you could do in street clothes too. So it's just a way to start a warm up and get into it. So YouTube, Instagram. I have a Twitter chat every Tuesday at 11 to 12. So hashtag Better Life Chat. So come join me there as well.
And our show today is going to be in the archives. So people who've not been able to listen to you and me talk live today will be able to go to Ask Beattie Podbean on the Progressive Radio Network archives and can hear this conversation. And they can also listen to the last 245 shows that I've done here.
That's great.
On the Progressive Radio Network. Now, listen, Sonia, do you think that we've motivated people today who were listening to the show to get moving and start exercising for a better and happier and longer life? What do you think?
I'd love to hear.
I would love to hear,
too. I know. And I would say, if it's something you're thinking about, what is one thing in your life that you do regularly? Whatever it is. Even if it's, I watch my favorite show every week, you know? And what? How do you make that happen? You know, you schedule it. You make sure you don't schedule other things in that way. So do the same sort of thing for movement.
Right. No, exactly.
And take small steps.
We have to be mindful about it. And, you know, when every patient leaves my office, I give them homework. And this is the homework I want them to be. I want you. I want me. I want all of us to be very, very mindful every day as we navigate our days to do what is in our best interest. And that takes some doing sometime. And of course, you know, exercise and everything that you're talking about and making sure that we eliminate toxicity, not just the chemicals, but the people. And if we need help, again, to be brave enough to know that reaching out and asking for help can make all the difference in your life and in your relationships. And it's not a weakness, it is a strength. So I keep saying the same thing every single week, hoping to, you know, like you, Sonia, to really be able to motivate people to live their lives and do what is in all of our best interest.
Yeah, and if they want to pay us $1,000 so that it's really expensive and they'll take the advice, that's fine too.
So interesting what this study found.
It is.
So I'm going to have to see the impact now that I have, cut my fees 50%. And yeah. I feel very good about having done that.
And I think it's great.
I really do think
that there are people who do want help and they deserve help too. So I have a very soft spot. I've been that, you know, my starving actor days. I needed help and people were there. So.
Exactly. And I think that sometimes, you know, fees can be, you know, completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
And exorbitant. And I think that nobody at all should be going and having 45-minute visits and being paying hundreds and hundreds. And of course, that's a whole other subject, 45
right.
minutes, 50 minutes in psychotherapy, which I think is nonsense.
I'm with you on that.
You know, for me, an hour is still 60 minutes. So listen, I want to thank you again so much for coming in, and we will have to continue to walk and talk.
Yes, we will.
And connect one block away. There's no excuse.
You can incorporate it, walking meetings.
Exactly. It's a wonderful idea.
It is.
Exactly. Well, listen, every week also, I leave the listeners with two, which I think are pretty important messages. And the first message is that we need to do whatever it is that we need to do to find ways to love ourselves and to do what is in our best interest. And the second, of course, is that we all need to do a much, much, much better job worldwide to find ways to love each other. So again, thank you for coming in. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And I will talk with you next week here on the Ask Beattie Show. Have a good rest of the day and take good care. Bye-bye.